Welcome to the Goldilocks Podcast, where we are unlabeled. Thank you for joining us on this journey as you are about to hear the raw, unfiltered, and true story of another family, educator, or ally of an underrepresented child with special needs. If you or someone you know is interested in sponsoring our podcast, please contact us at GoldilocksLLC@gmail.com. That's Goldilocks, the way we spell it, LLC@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the Goldilocks Podcast, where we are unlabeled. Our goal is to spotlight the resources, stories, and inspiration of our underserved communities. No matter what your situation, we'll find a way to make it just right. This is the Goldilocks Podcast. Today, I have the esteemed pleasure to introduce Stacy from Everything Autism. Stacy began her career as a speech-language therapist in public schools of Louisiana in 98. She met her first student with autism, and it changed her focus and led her to where she is today. I'm so excited for us to introduce Stacy to our audience. Stacy, welcome to the Goldilocks Podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you too. Stacy and I had a brief conversation the other day, which should have been its own podcast. We regret not having you guys hear that, but we're going to bring the heat today for us to get you guys to know Stacy a little bit. And she's already agreed for us to do a couple more of these so that she can get into some more specifics about what it is that she does, because an hour ain't enough for Stacy. She likes to give it all.
And we appreciate that. There's so much to learn.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So why don't we start with you just introducing your journey, if you want to start from that fateful day in Louisiana and move from there, we can go like that.
I will. I have to really focus, because that is it's a really emotional story for me. Mm-hmm. However, so I was a speech therapist in the public schools, and you know, I always tell people I remember the influx. I remember when my caseload had no students diagnosed with autism, and then I remember the year I had one, and then two, and then four, and then six. I remember that, right? 20 something years ago. Before Google, before YouTube, but there was this little kiddo, and I went to the classroom, and I remember seeing the teacher strap him in the stroller and like pushing him down the hallway and just fussing at him. And I stopped the teacher and I said, "Why is he in a stroller? Like, can he not walk?" Because typically for early intervention, if they can't, you know, if they're not ambulatory, they have some sort of wheelchair or a walker. And she said, "No, he's autistic and he just runs out the door." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then I remember just looking at that little boy and I said, "There is a kid in there that has something to say." And that was it. Like, that was it. I like changed my schedule. I was in his classroom more. I started going into the home to work with his mom. We're both trying to figure it out, because like I said, before Google, before YouTube, we didn't have access to Amazon and books. And so we had to figure it out. And we did figure it out. I did a lot of training, a lot of reading. I have to say, I always, you know, I have people that come into my life professionally that I don't look for, but they have been perfect for giving me information and educating me on an exceptional level. I'm very, very fortunate. And I know that that's just, I don't know what you want to call it, divine intervention, or you're in the right place at the right time, whatever phrase, you know, those people, and I still keep in touch with them and I call them and say, "Thank you so much for allowing me to tag your profession," because my occupational therapist at the school literally let me go to all of the sensory trainings that were meant for occupational therapists, but it was so important for me to learn what to do with the students. And I hadn't thought about what you just said in terms of when you introduced that it sort of shifted my direction. And it did. I stepped out of speech therapy. I didn't step out of speech therapy. I changed my role at the school, asked my principal, "Can I go into the early intervention classroom because the teacher's leaving?" And of course, there's always a shortage of speech therapists. And he was like, "The department's not going to like that, but I would love it if you would do that." And I did. I went and got certified in early intervention, and I wanted to be in the classroom to implement the strategies every day, all day, because I wanted to see if it would work. Like, I wanted to see if we could make a difference. And it did. It made a huge difference. So that was exciting for me. And now I'm here with a history of connect the dots of things that I've done on this journey to be able to just support the community, because it's really what I love to do. I mean, I know that I talk about autism all the time. I put a thing on Facebook last weekend and said, can I not talk about autism for 24 hours? I made it 23, but I had a loophole, and I found a book that I ordered, and I said, oh, I'm not really talking, I'm just reading about autism. It doesn't really count. Yeah, so that's my Lamar, and I carry Lamar's picture. Sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't know enough to help Lamar the way he needed. We did what we could, but it's all good because Lamar helped me find my purpose. And now so many families have benefited. All right, that story is so emotional for me.
I hear, I imagine that it didn't have a happy ending from your reaction there. We don't have to go into it if it's too much for you.
It wasn't a, I just feel like I could have done more, but I was learning, you know, I was learning with Lamar, and I didn't have enough, you know, we didn't have enough access to information and materials and therapy at the time. But it's, you know, Lamar is happy. He is living in Morgan City, Louisiana. He is, he still loves his string. And Lamar's living, you know, a happy life with his mom. I just feel like there could have been more. I feel like I wasn't able to provide him with a way to communicate efficiently. And it's just, I just didn't know enough at the time. But, you know, it, like I said, Lamar's mom knows, we keep in touch, and we know that Lamar is, he made an impact. Because he made an impact on me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for a second there, I thought he passed away. Oh, I'm so happy to hear that he's okay. But the passion based off of, you know, I'm supposing that your emotion, and correct me if I'm wrong, is from not realizing what you thought was his full potential to maybe be an independent person, to not have to rely on people, or what is it that you feel you didn't get to accomplish with Lamar?
I just didn't have all the resources and the time. Like I said, I did what I could. I went on the weekends and worked with Lamar. Anyway, he's doing fine. Lamar's probably very, you know, like, this is great. I get to, you know, hang out with my string. But I feel that Lamar we were never able to develop a really good communication system for him. And I want that for all children. But, you know, he is very well loved. He is very well taken care of. He's tall, but I carry his pictures in my wallet. Everywhere I go, it's laminated. When he was little, 3-year-old. And
that's your inspiration.
Yep. That's my Lamar.
Why don't we use that inspiration as a segue to get into that communication aspect, being with the background of the speech language therapy. I remember in our conversation the other day, you introduced me to a bunch of different concepts of speech and how different ways you can communicate with your child if they're not, you know, verbal. There's many other ways. Why don't you get into a little bit of the many ways you've realized, maybe helped develop or even inspired with the communication ways with the autistic kiddos?
Of course. And I think, you know, in regards to communication, and you and I had this conversation in terms of, I want autism to be seen as what it is and not a behavior disorder, because it's not. And it's really about communication. And I tell parents all the time and teachers, can you imagine sitting in an environment and you can't communicate what your needs are, or just that was funny, or hey, can you come sit next to me? Like, how frustrating that must be. And autism is not an intellectual delay. You can have comorbid disabilities, but it's not an intellectual delay. And I know it's hard for parents to understand that, because if they're not getting that communication back, right? So you are not really sure what's going on. What are they thinking? So what's important in terms of when I'm working with families is understanding that developing a method of communication is important, and it may look different than the way you communicate. So if you're a verbal communicator as a parent, your child may be verbal. They may be verbal and use an AAC technology device, or they may...
Tell us what AAC is.
AAC, of course. So AAC device is an augmentative communication, alternative augmentative communication system. And that can be, it used to be these big bulky pieces of equipment, the Proloquo and these devices, but now, you know, we have technology, so they have the application that can go on an iPad. Mm. And it is a way for individuals to communicate with technology. And it is a wonderful way to communicate. And we have many adults that are communicating using an AAC device, many children using it very effectively. There are two young men in engineering school, and they are nonverbal, and they totally rely on technology for communication, and they're going to be engineers. And that's okay, right? We have technology. And I understand, it's not that I don't understand parents want to hear their child's voice. It's not that I don't understand you want to have that verbal communication. And I'm not saying that we don't want to build that, but it's not always going to be an efficient way of communication. And even adults, autistic adults who are verbal and it is efficient, they still will say, I just watched a Facebook Live, a couple of my favorite autistic adults, and they were talking in terms of, you know, I'm having a conversation with you, but when I finish this, I'm going to have to, like, 5 hours just sit, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to process information, come back with a response, keep it going. You know, all of that is hard work for autistic individuals, because they're also doing the sensory processing component. Mm. And so a lot of times I will hear from parents, well, he just is stubborn and he just doesn't want to talk. I'm like, no, nobody is going to just purposefully put themselves in a position where they can't get their needs met, right? Like that's not something that you would do. So it's thinking about how can children communicate. Now, pictures, sign language is really good for us to start with little ones. And sign language is great for teaching kids to request their needs and wants in the beginning. It's not necessarily a way that we would sustain, because then you're limited to only talking to those who know sign language.
Exactly.
Yes. So it's a great starting point for some kids who can do that. And you're always building that verbal communication, but you want to have the backup. So the backup can be pictures. Everybody knows I'm all about using visuals, sign language, and technology. And we have everything on our phone and our tablets that is available. It's just knowing what's available and knowing how to use it. And that's where I come in with families to help them understand and choose, because it's not just this one device works for all children. You have to have a speech therapist that can actually do an evaluation, decide what's best, which program is best, or if the child is ready.
Yeah, so for sure.
It's a lot.
Why don't you use that segue that you just introduced your company, because it's important for everyone to know exactly what exactly your company kind of focuses on, particularly you representing it being here in general. So why don't you go into some detail as to exactly what your services provide? And then I want us to take a step back after that to go back to 98, because I think you're one of the perfect people to speak to, because one of the things that has been just mind-boggling to me, because I've done some epidemiology research on autism, because obviously once you get a diagnosis that your child has autism, you just dive into the waters, and it's deep waters. And there's so many theories, there's so many ideas, there's so many different factions of people who believe it's this, it's that, it's the third. And I'd love to get your perspective, but before we get into that, because we're already 20 minutes in, we haven't even introduced your company yet. So let's talk about your company. Let's talk about the services you provide, how you provide them, and generally speaking, what it is parents can expect when they get you into their lives.
So the name of my company is Everything Autism Beyond the Label. And the reason it is called Everything Autism is because I have a background in speech therapy. I also have a master's certification in ABA. And then I went back to school to get psychology master in child development. And I'm also a certified sensory enrichment therapist. And I combine everything. So I am always working on communication, sensory regulation, you know, behaviors. However, once we develop communication and regulate sensory, behaviors decrease. And then we don't really need to work on behaviors because they have a way to communicate and they can process the environment. And then of course, you know, I've been working in the school system for 35 plus years. So what I do is parents come to me for support in regards to what can I do at home. And so first it starts with, I have these challenges, what can I do? Then it evolves because I don't do anything cookie cutter. I am not a cookie cutter person. Everything is individualized. Even parents who have more than one child on the spectrum, we have a different strategy and plan and visuals for each child. But what I help parents do is not just understand what strategies they can use and how they can use the strategies in their home, because every family dynamic is different. I also do a lot around helping parents understand, learn how to advocate and embrace their child, because when parents say to me, what's the one therapy? What's the one thing? What's the one supplement? What should I do that's going to make it, you know, all better?
Where's the magic pill?
Exactly. And I tell parents, you know, of course, speech therapy is important. Of course, occupational therapy is important. But the one thing, the common denominator for the children that I worked with that were little, and now they are not little anymore, it was the parents. It was not that they had access to therapy. It was the parents loving their children, accepting their children, building their skills, advocating for their children, and learning what their child needed and understanding what their child was trying to communicate. And that goes a long way. It really goes a long way. I don't know if parents realize how much power they really have. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes, you know, oh, well, you know, they're the professional. I'm like, but you're like the profession on your child. Like, right. You really do know more. You just need to help connecting the dots, right? So I help make that sort of connection of, this is what's going on and this is what your child is communicating. What can we do, right? How can we help so that they're not so frustrated? And really just understanding autism is so important because every child is different. I mean, it's just, there's no one-stop shopping, this is going to work for, you know, whether it's a diet or a supplement or a therapy, every child is different. They really are. So I started this business, and actually I've been doing this for many, many years just for free. That's why on my website, there's a section that says Ask Stacy. Because over the years, I get calls. Someone told me to ask you. They said, ask Stacy. So I'm, you know, getting calls and talking to parents. And I worked with a mom for 18 months, never met her or her child. And met her. She called because he was banging his head on the wall and started working with her. And after the 18 months, he was communicating verbally. He was making requests. He stopped banging his head after a week of me working with her, just implementing some simple strategies. And that was it. And I remember after that 18 months, I said, I could do this with a lot of families. Like I could do virtual, this was 5 years ago. I can do this. Like I can reach other families. And that was it. And my goal is to reach as many families as possible and not make it about only families who have a lot of money, because it really does break my heart that only families that have a lot of money get all of these fancy therapists or access to things that appear to be fancy. And I think everybody has a right to know and understand and learn strategies. And so I designed my business to just be able to make, and then, you know, just want to make ends meet. And I wanted it to be really minimal. I want parents to be able to afford, to be able to, it just makes a difference when parents know. It makes such a difference. And the reason I did not start a nonprofit is because I did not want to run a nonprofit. I really didn't want to run a business. I mean, to be honest with you, I have no desire. I am not, you know, I don't get up in the morning and say, oh, I love that I'm just like a entrepreneur. No, that's not what I'm excited about. I'm excited that every day I get to get up and do what I love to do, what I'm supposed to do, and use my gifts that I believe God has given me to help families. And on the side, you know, there's a business that goes along with it.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah, you basically described the double bottom line, where you have like the one bottom line of the financial part, which can either be the make or break to you, or the second bottom line, which is the moral part, which is the part that actually, you know, makes you want to get up every day. Like, you know, money is just this tangible object for trade. It really isn't a thing that you can be passionate about, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, some people maybe, but the gross majority of us want to do something we truly enjoy. You can get paid to do all kinds of things, but if you're doing something you enjoy that truly speaks to your moral compass, then money really is of no consequence. I tell you right now, Goldilocks ain't making me a penny, but it is something I'm incredibly passionate about, because not only can I help inspire others, but hopefully I'll get some advice to help my own child, who
of course
obviously is autistic and can use help from any forum that is willing to give it. So I truly understand where you're coming from, and it speaks to me, and I appreciate it, because, you know, if you didn't have that mindset, then maybe you wouldn't be here with us today.
That is so true. I always say that I was doing in-home parent support before it was a thing. I mean, I've always gone into the homes. I have always communicated with parents on a regular basis as a speech therapist. I always thought the parents were the key. And I remember a principal of mine stopped me in the hallway and said, you know, Miss Badon, you're really good with those parents. And I didn't think much of it, right? Oh, you know, Mr. Hebert, because I just like people in general. Mm-hmm. And I actually called him when I moved to Puerto Rico, and I said, let me tell you what I'm doing. Remember you said, I said, this is what I'm doing. And he was like, oh, that's great. So, you know, just those little things that, you know, he saw it. I didn't think much of it, because it's just me. It's just what I do. Parents are important. They really are important. And I want educators and therapists to see that. If a therapist, you know, when I coach parents, I tell them, if the therapist or the teacher does not let you come in and see what they're doing, does not give you activities to do at home to generalize those skills, you need to get another therapist. Yeah. There is no reason that parents should not be included in therapy and education. Children can't make progress just going to therapy once or twice a week and coming home and
in status quo. Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't be a secret what's going on behind the doors of those rooms, that you should know what's going on.
1000%. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason why we're doing this, is because this is obviously going to hit more parents than it is educators. And you parents do need to understand what your powers and your abilities are.
Yeah.
And also, you know, to get some questions you may have answered through forums and resources like this. Questions like, and another segue back to 98 that I wanted to speak to you about. So you say that you can almost clearly draw the line where it went from, yeah, autism, I've heard of that, to wow, every single child coming into my door, or like so many more than before, seem to have this diagnosis. What is the corollary? If you look in some of these research articles, the amount of children expected to have autism has gone from like 1 in 1,000 about 25 years ago to 1 in 200 about 15 years ago. And nowadays in New Jersey, it's 1 in 40.
Yeah.
That's nuts. So for something to be exponentially increasing in its ability to be, I don't know whether it's diagnosed too much or whatever, I like, as a scientist in generally what I do, I have a big science background. I like to know why. I don't like to just hear it just cause. It's like, no. Nothing is just cause. There's always a why. So I have my theories, none of which are substantiated because I don't know anything. But What are your theories? And what do you feel like, maybe you even have some evidence to show and justify why in the last 30 years, 25 years or so, we've had such an increase?
You know, it's interesting. I have a, that you asked that question. I have a friend of mine who is a scientist, and we have these conversations all the time about DNA and genetics. And so what I will say based on my experience, number one, we have a lot more children, people in the world. So whenever there's more children, you can have more of something. But also, autistic adults are marrying and they're having children. So there's an increase right there, right? Which is great, because that means we have autistic adults who are in our communities and working and having families. And that's great, right? So that's one component. The other component is in terms of, and I know that there's a lot of, you know, I remember when I first started this journey, there was the whole conversation about the vaccinations and all of these things. And I don't disagree that there are children who are vaccine injured, right? Which is really something different than autism. Mm-hmm. And that's, as a parent, when you go in and you get vaccinations, you sign a piece of paper saying that it's a risk, right? Like, because they don't know how anyone's going to react to anything that you inject. That's anything. Whether you eat peanut butter, you don't know that you're going to have an allergic reaction until you
exactly,
eat peanut butter.
Exactly.
So there are children who are vaccine injured, but I will say a lot of times when I meet families, when I talk to them, when I go back to their child's infant stage, the flags were there. You just don't know because you're not looking for autism, right? It's, you're not looking at your 6-month-old baby and saying, oh, I think they might have autism. It's just your baby, right? Whether it's, oh, they're a fussy baby, or, oh, they don't like to swing, or they want to swing for hours, or they like to be in their crib for hours. They're such a good baby. They just will stay in their crib for hours. And of course, anytime I hear that, you know, I'm just like flag, 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 right?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like babies, you know, typically want that sort of like engagement when they're awake. I think there's a lot of, I guess if you say theories, I don't think it's one thing, but I do think everything goes back to, and I'm not a scientist, but I think everything goes back to your DNA. It goes back to your genetic disposition for whatever it is, whether it's hypertension, whether it's heart disease, whether it's autism, whether it's hearing impairment, you know, there's something that is just built into your DNA system. And it's just a different way of processing. I mean, it really, I don't know if you've seen, there's like memes regarding autism in terms of the processing system, just like a computer. For example, it's like I can't use an iOS app on an Android, right?
Yes.
Because they have different processing systems. So when I'm talking to teachers, you know, I will say to them, you're talking to them in iOS language and they're in Android. So you've got to learn Android language in order to communicate with them and help them. And it's really just understanding that child and how they process their environment. You know, I'm not a parent of a child with autism. And I understand the need to want to know. I don't think that is, I think that as a parent, you want to know. I also want parents to get to work and just do the work. Like, you can find out, but like along the way, like I want you to do some strategies, build your child's communication, like really get some work done, because even if we find out, we still have a child with autism that needs to build skills.
Right.
And what are we going to do about that? One of my favorite posts in a group was a mom. She came into the group and she said, hi, I'm new. She said, I got a diagnosis last week. I've cried for 7 days and now I'm ready to get to work. And I was like, that is what I like to hear. you know, it's like, what do I do? Like, what can I do now? And I do think that there's, you know, I think the research is important, but I also am very embracing of neurodiversity. It's, you know, I know it's a challenge, and I respect autistic adults who feel that, you know, wanting autism to go away, you know, it's kind of insulting to those autistic individuals. Like, what are you saying? Like, I'm not of value. And, you know, my thinking is if we can foster the skills in our children, develop their communication, all of us can benefit because they process differently and they see things that we don't see in terms of how things connect. That's a benefit to us. I just met a family last week, and the way this child manipulates objects and perceives them, his environment, and responds, I said, do you know that your child is he has the potential to be the person to find that DNA pattern for solving or curing that disease. Mm-hmm. Your child has that thinking process to be able to develop something where maybe people can walk again because he can see those connections that we can't see. Mm-hmm. I want us to be aware of that. I want us to be aware of a child who lines things up. Do we know if that's something that is going to build into a skill, right? Develop something, create something. So don't take that away, right? Because that may be something that is potentially going to help all of us, right? It's going to help all of us. And lining up objects is not interfering in anyone's work. Like, it's like, so they line up the cars, whatever. Yeah. Yes, I know they do it in the middle of the floor. Walk over the line. Like, you know, in the grand scheme of life, you know, there are so many other things to get upset about than a line of cars in the middle of the kitchen. I get it.
1,000%.
But there are also strategies that you can do. For example, if your child needs to have things in order or line up, designate an area for that. You can use visual supports, right? Tape off an area and say, this is where you can line your things up. And then you don't have to walk over in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You're happy, they're happy, everybody gets what they need. So I don't know when we'll know. I don't know if there's one thing. There's so many different theories and research about, you know, where autism, you know, autism's not new. It's certainly not new. I do not think that we were missing diagnosis, because clearly you cannot miss a child who is nonverbal sitting in a classroom and not know that there was something that needed to be looked at or addressed. So I think it's just a combination of many things, many, many, many things. I mean, when I think of my family, my uncle, I'm like, oh, Uncle Leonard was autistic. But Uncle Leonard lived in a time where he lived in the country. He grew up in this, he lived to be 92, never left that house. He was a mailman. You do the same route. You never have to talk to anybody if you don't want to. Your routine is the same. He goes home. I remember when we were kids, we would go there for these big family picnics, and Uncle Leonard had this big case of books, and he would say, come, let me show you the books. But we couldn't touch the books, right? You couldn't do anything with the books. But he wanted to show you the books, and they were in order, and they were always there. And that was Uncle Leonard. But he lived in a time where he could choose. The schools were different. You know, when I went to school, we had recess 3 times a day. We had recess as soon as we got to school. We had recess in the morning and recess after lunch and PE every day. Wow. So children who were, you know, sensory processing challenges or ADHD, they were getting that regulation by going outside. And now kids have to sit for 90 minutes for math. Sit. It's so developmentally inappropriate. Like, it's just like, what is that about? But, you know, it is what it is. It's the school system we have now. Luckily, parents have choices. It's just different. It's just really different. But I don't think that we missed. I remember the influx. I remember. And that's when, you know, I started doing work and getting parents together and starting a support group and trying to get a program for our school. And because I remember, I was like, we have 5 children now diagnosed with autism. Like, what is happening?
It's halftime, ladies and gentlemen. We are going back to the interview in just 1 minute. I just want to take this time to once again ask for any sponsors to please contact us at GoldilocksLLC@gmail.com. That's GoldilocksLLC@gmail.com. If you or someone you know is interested in sponsoring, thank you so much for listening to the first half of the podcast, and the second half is coming right up. So it's generally speaking, even living through it, it's still quite the mystery as to how we went from not many to this influx. It's again, like you said, it's not the end all be all as to why. It's not necessarily going to change things if I knew why my child was, you know, this way versus, you know, another way. Mm-hmm. But it just makes you just wonder. Because there's, you know, there's theories about, you know, our diets and how that might mm-hmm. be doing something mm-hmm. to it. And we eat more processed food than we ever mm-hmm. eat in. And there's something called organic now. There wasn't organic before because everything was organic. But now we have to specify exactly. because yeah. most exactly. of our food ain't real. So, yes. and then all of a sudden now you have this, yes. this new, more, I guess, categorically specific result that people are researching and saying may be due to this stuff. So it's stuff I think yeah. about. It's stuff I'm sure other parents think about when they're
being told
a million different things, different ways to go.
And
so go ahead.
No, I think it's, you know, it's so multi-layered and complex because, you know, I have a set of twins, one twin, the other is not, right? Like, so what is that about, right?
That's then, nuts. Are they fraternal?
You know, yeah. It varies. I mean, I have some sets of twins that I've worked with where the one twin is autistic and one is not. And there's no pattern of fraternal or identical or any difference. It's just amazing because it's not like one thing. It's not like, oh, okay, it's got to be this because here's the pattern, right? Like a set of twins and every twin, there's always this. And there is a family in Houston, Texas, and this family had three identical, which rare within itself, three triplet girls, like no in vitro, just naturally, they had three identical baby girls. Every single one of them is diagnosed with autism, and every single one of them is different. One is verbal, one is minimally verbal. They're all different, but identical twins. And like that is something interesting. I'm sure that the parents have done genetic testing and
yeah.
contributed to the research that's going on. And I do think that the research is, you know, I think it's helpful. I think it's insightful, but I think that we need to spend money on the children and the adults that are here because the adults need mental health services. They need job placement services. They need community services. They need support for independent living. Our children need resources. They need therapy. They need good educational services. We need well-trained teachers. We really do need well-trained teachers. So there's a lot that we need, and you know, all of my little ones are now grown up. And autism is not a medical condition where your child gets sick and passes before you do. Right. So we need to build those skills. And I actually had a session last night with a mom in India, and she was having trouble letting go of, and she was concerned about her child doing something independently. And she's like, well, I think that he needs, and I'm not really sure, and he's going to be upset. And I said, he might be upset a little bit. You know, kids are upset sometimes when we say no. However, long-term, think of it long-term. If you don't provide him with the ability to do this on his own, when you are not here, he won't have the ability. And what is he going to do then, right? Like, we yeah. have to think about the fact that our children are going to live long lives, and we need to help them become productive citizens. And it looks different. It looks different, right? Independence looks different. There are folks who have children without a diagnosis of autism, and their child's independence is living in their basement, right? Or in the garage apartment. Oh, whatever. It doesn't really matter. I am all about everyone having a job. I am not, Like, I think everyone should be able to bring some income in and have something to get up for, to go to do that's productive. Mm-hmm.
1,000%. The main thing, I think, for a lot of our families who have a child with autism is, what happens when I die? I want to know my kid will be okay.
Yes.
And it's the motivation behind everything I do regarding
exactly.
him. Exactly. So that if daddy's not here, you're going to be all right. Like, I need to know that. I need to know that my presence today gives you that that beacon, or that kind of like compass as to how you can provide for yourself later. So it's really important for us to do that. And I agree with you that our resources should be kind of tailored towards the present, because at the very moment we have what we have. I do also think that we should know if we're doing something to contribute to the numbers, but at the very least, we should be doing everything for the people who are here and present today, because our influence on them means so much moving forward. So regardless, we'll get into more of that at later dates. Anyway, so one thing I wanted to ask you a little bit more about is your clientele. You have clientele all over the world. I want to get some insight as to how you find these people, and are there language barriers? You just said India. Like, whoa, okay. So what kind of, are you speaking English to them?
I have just been so blessed. I mean, I can't even literally, like, I just feel sometimes that God just sends things my way that are just wonderful. I mean, I don't even know how else to explain it. So when I started the business after, you know, that working with that mom, I was doing it the smart way, maintaining my job with the school district. And I was doing in-home support. So in Texas, they have something called the autism supplement, where parents get in-home parent training. Mm-hmm. And I was an in-home parent trainer for the school. So I went into homes and helped parents with strategies, which I loved. And I decided one day I wanted to go to volunteer in Ghana, Africa. Mm. And I was working with a family from Ghana that was in Houston. And I said, hey, do you know anyone? Do you know anyone? Call someone, just whatever. And so they did, got a number, called, and I said, hey, I want to come and volunteer and do some training. And they were like, how soon can you get here? And I was like, well, I don't have any money. I guess I'll have to find some money and do some fundraising, but I'm going to make it happen. Made it happen. Raised money. Friends supported me. Strangers supported me. I went to Ghana. It was supposed to be 2 weeks and then expanded to 3 weeks. I was there for 6 weeks. It was amazing, amazing, amazing experience. And I came back. I called my supervisor and I said, I will not be returning to work. I have to do this every day. I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea how to run a business, but I know this is what I'm supposed to do every single day. Work with families, help families. And I did. I called my boys who were in college. My youngest had just started. And I said, listen, mommy loves you dearly. I'm not going back to the school. I'm going to do this business full time. So you have your scholarships. I'm going to tell you three things. Don't get anyone pregnant. Don't go to jail. And don't lose your scholarship, because I can't help you, because I'm going to do this thing. And they said, okay, because they know, I mean, my kids have been born into my, passion for autism. And that's what I did. And the international families, people just say, hey, ask Stacy. Like, I am a people person. I got this contact and then someone else reached out to me. I worked with a dad reached out to me, and we're still in touch, from Libya. And like, sent a message, hey, someone said, can you help me with my son? And I was like, whoa, like, this is kind of serious that someone's reaching out from Libya. And then it just fostered. And I currently contract with a company in Australia, and I have a lot of international families with that company. But I have families, I've lost count of the countries. Typically, the language barrier is not an issue. Most of the time, there is some English spoken. But I have done visuals in Arabic. I have done visuals in, I cannot remember this language. I can't remember the language because it's a really rare language, but I had to find a translator in Houston. And, you know, I will say, while I worked in Houston, Houston is very diverse.
Yeah.
And as an in-home parent trainer, I had translators all the time with me. And that is why I am currently in Puerto Rico, because I decided I wanted to immerse myself and learn Spanish and not have a translator with me all the time.
Spanish will take you far.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a people person. I love, you know, different cultures. And actually, it's really interesting. Autism is the same everywhere. When I went to, I have to share this funny story.
Sure.
In terms of before I went to Ghana, you know, everybody always says, oh, you know, it's just the American kids with autism that are picky eaters. Kids in Africa probably aren't picky eaters because, you know, we all think everyone in Africa is starving, right?
Oh, this is the worst.
So I went to Ghana and I came back and with my colleagues and I said, so just to let you all know, autism is the same everywhere. And the only difference between the sort of eating, which it's, you know, it's picky eating, if we want to call it that, but it's really sensory based. It's not really just picky eating for no reason. And I said, the only difference is the kids in the States eat 5 items out of 200. The kids in Ghana eat 3 items out of 10, right? Like, it's the same. Like, it's all the same. Autism is the same everywhere. Every family I meet, it's autism. There's no variance of, you know, whether it's sensory or it's the same. The difference is culturally, right? Impacts, right? The culture impacts how the child is perceived. The culture impacts how the child is, taught in terms of there are some cultures where it doesn't matter. Like, you are going to do this, you're going to do this, and this is what you're going to do, right? You're going to not look autism, and because this is not acceptable in our culture. And so those are the families that I have really good, honest conversations about. And one of the things that I love is when families that were really resistant, really embarrassed and shame because they don't want to tell their grandparents because it's shame on the family and based on their culture, when they say to me, we told everyone that we are going to support this child and this is what we need to do. And if you can't work on the skills and help him with his communication and follow up with the strategies, then you can't be in the circle. If you can't be on, you know, team Bobby and support what we're doing, then, you know, just let us know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they realize that their child is wonderful, right? They're not a bad child. They're not stubborn. It's not a behavior disorder. It's so not a behavior disorder. I'm like, the day I die, I mean, I don't want to leave this earth until everyone knows that autism is not a behavior disorder. Like that, I'm like, okay, I can go in peace. That's all I need. Everybody to know it's not a behavior disorder, because it's not. It's really not.
Well, go into why you got that revelation, because think about the most number one type of thing for to children with autism. What is it called? Applied ABA. Behavior analysis. So behavior seems to be the main thing that everyone is focused on, because I do think that the superficial nature of our society is that you must appear a certain way, whether or not that you actually know what you're doing. Yes. And that's the most frustrating thing with dealing with autism so far for me, is that I know my son aims to please. He is a sweet, sweet boy, and he's compliant, so compliant. Mm-hmm. Compliant to the point where he's robotic, where he doesn't even know what he's doing, but he knows that's what's expected of him.
Yeah.
And I've been telling his teachers and his therapist, like, look, I don't care that he does this thing. Yep. I care that he knows that he's doing this thing and that it makes sense to him. If he's not generalizing and he just sees the prompt and he does what the prompt says to him to do, he's just a computer. He's not a person. Yep. So I've seen the forest from the trees from a long time ago, and I don't really know how to affect change there, but I know I can advocate mm-hmm. that I see it and I'm shaking my fist like this is not what I want. Mm-hmm. But you have the answers here where you can help give us some guidance. So please embark on that journey of telling us what it is about the behavior that seems to be taking away from the true nature, which is the communication of it all.
I think it's just a matter of, I can honestly say I never looked at autism as a behavior disorder. I mean, I always, and maybe it's just because I'm a communicator naturally and I love to communicate, which is probably why I became a speech therapist. Mm-hmm. I get paid to talk. or communicate, should I say. I just think that for me, I just see a child, right? A person. And then I'm like, okay, so what can I do to help them? I don't see they're not following, I don't see all of that. I see, okay, so it looks like they're struggling with this. What can I do to help them? In regards to the behavior component, I think, and you just said it, the expectation is that, we're supposed to sit, we're supposed to, follow directions. The other part of it is, It's something tangible. It's easy to work on something that is, sit, pick up, respond. It's hard work to understand. It's hard work to problem solve what their sensory needs are. You have to stay on top of that. And it's work. But it's not work once you learn. Once you learn, it becomes I tell parents, I'm like, listen, I'm doing this, I'm helping you, but you're going to become your child's expert. That's my goal, is for you to become your child's expert. So you know what to advocate for, you know what they need, and then you teach them to advocate for themselves, whatever that looks like. When children are throwing a chair, right? They're communicating, I need help, I can't do this, somebody please help me. Mm-hmm. That's what they're communicating. They're not communicating, oh, he just doesn't want to do math. No. He's communicating, I cannot, and I need someone in this room to help me so I can. Children will do if they can. If they cannot, we need to help them. No, I refuse to believe that 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, 6-year-old children come to school with the intent of, I want to throw a chair, I want to hit, scratch, and bite someone. Ooh, they're not having any fun doing that. That is not a fun way to navigate their environment. And so looking at the behaviors in terms of what are they communicating? And I think I might've sent it to you, the behavior, module about, behaviors communication, because it is. We just have to figure out what it is that they're communicating. However, if we work on developing a communication method for them, then it's not so much of a mystery, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're able to tell us. The other thing is, a lot of the behaviors, that sensory regulation is so important. It is so important. It is so important. A child jumping and running on the sofa and all of that, that's just, I'm not regulated, I need to get regulated. So what can we do to get them regulated, right? We can provide them with sensory diet of activities. We can provide them with more outside time. To give them that opportunity to regulate their system so they can process. And everyone looks at behaviors as if it's an intentional defiance, and that's not what it is. It's really communication. Whether it's communicating, I need sensory input, communicating, I don't know how, I need help, or communicating, I'm really struggling right now, and I don't even know what I'm struggling with, right? So can somebody in the room figure out and help me, because I'm a child, right? Please somebody help me. That's why children come to adults, mm-hmm. because they know they don't know. For me, it's frustrating when I go into a classroom and do an observation and it's because the child is such a misbehaving behavior problem, and literally it doesn't take much to change the situation by just changing the environment. For example, one of the simplest things is when you have a child who may elope, right? Run out of the classroom. And my colleagues and I would always get really frustrated when we walk in and the child's desk is right next to the door. So they just have easy access to get out. Yeah. And so I'm thinking, why don't you change his seat? Well, because, the music center is over there. Okay, so why don't you change his seat? Well, because, you know, this is the way I arrange the classroom. Okay, so once again, why are we not setting this child up for success? Your music center is not a priority over this child being set up for success. And I need you to see that. It's not about you and where you want your music center. It's about what does this child need to be set up for success, to be safe in the classroom. It's really that simple. Just, it is. It's really, I mean, I say it's simple because it really is simple. One of my moms sent me video the other day. She was like, I can't believe, like, he's already, like, he's doing this. She's like, Stacy, I didn't think it would work. I said, it does. It really does work. I wouldn't steer you wrong. You just have to do it. Just do the work. Once you do the work, it makes a difference. It's hard work. I'm not saying it is. I mean, for me, I love it, right? But I understand it's hard work, but it is what a parent has been charged with, no matter what, whether you have a child, it doesn't matter. Whatever we get, right, is what we have to decide. How are we going to parent and help our child grow to be this individual? Whatever, whether we get a boy or a girl, whether we get autism or not autism, whether we get hearing impaired, Down syndrome, you know, illness, we got to do the work. We chose to be parents. We just got to do the work. Yeah. It's hard work. It's not easy. It's hard work, but you can do it, and then it pays off.
1,000%. Yes. Nothing pays off more than seeing your child that you have put everything in being that person that you knew that they always could be. I think a lot of parents get in their own way because they try to download their own dreams and thoughts and ideas into their kid. And if their kid, and this goes for all kinds of parents. It's all the time, and even the neurotypical, where it's like, hey, my dad always wanted me to be a basketball player, but boy, do I love these drums. I want to be a musician. And the parents, exactly. Like, no, it's got to be basketball. So it's no different. Exactly. It's no different. No, it's just about tempering expectations and really trying to focus on what your child's needs are.
Exactly. Tempering your expectations. It cracks me up when somebody finds out they're having a girl. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to plan the wedding. I'm like, you don't even know if she wants to get married.
Yeah.
And then if she doesn't get married, you're going to be upset with her because your dream of planning a wedding, it is not about you. Like, it's so not about you.
Yeah, that's such really a good funny. Example. That's such a good example. So
they do it all the time.
I know. I mean, I've been guilty of it. You're a mom. I'm sure you've been guilty of it. But I think, you know, what separates, you know, the enlightened from the unenlightened is being able to self-reflect and be like, that's kind of on me. Like, I shouldn't have
even done that. Exactly.
So, you know, that's all it is. But anyway, I wanted to talk about something specifically about your webpage that I spoke to you briefly about when we spoke on the phone the other day too, that really attracted me to you. As you know, Goldilocks is really trying to represent the underserved and the underrepresented communities. And one thing that I loved about your webpage is so many black and brown faces on it. And you're like, OMG, this is totally awesome. She is not only someone that is an advocate for autistic families, but there are families that you don't always see on these webpages. So why don't you talk a little bit about your experience there? Because you said some interesting things on the phone that I thought was really funny. And I think everyone would love to hear it.
So, you know, I always say I am not a small business. I'm a mini business because I'm literally a one-man show. Like I do video editing, marketing, whatever that looks like. And I mean, I'm doing it all. And so when I did my website, I used my families, right? Like, these are my families that I work with. And I actually got feedback. And someone said to me, you know, you really should change the look of your website because people are going to be turned off that you have so many black and brown people on your website. And I said, well, the people who are turned off by that, it's their loss because I'm really good at what I do and my families benefit, and that's fine with me. If someone does not want to get my services because of the photos on my website and the families that I support, then that's their loss. The other component is I wanted black and brown families to know black and brown families do sign up for these kind of services. Black and brown families can become empowered, and that's important. Because a lot of families feel like they can't, or, you know, well, you know, the teachers know, or I don't have, you know, a college degree. I'm like, you don't need, that's not, you just need to know your child. I just had a meeting with a mom, and she said, I just don't know what to say in the IEP. And I say, you say what you want for your child. You're not being tested. This is not an exam. You're not going in. You go in and say what you want for your child. It's really that simple. It doesn't have to be fancy words or all these other things. Just say what you want for your child and what you don't want. Be very clear about what you don't want as well, right? If you don't want this, then you tell them, I don't want this, and this is what I do want for my child. So it's important, but it's interesting, you know, when I talk to business folks who try to give me advice, and I just tell them, I'm like, listen, you don't know me very well, but I am the duck that goes the other direction my entire life. And I'm the duck that goes in the opposite direction, and I don't even know where anybody else is going. And I think that stressed out my mom a lot. My mom is very much a conformist. It was very difficult for her to, even when I went to Ghana, I mean, she was just very upset, you know, what are you doing? But that is who I am. That's what Stacy does. Whatever Stacy feels in terms of this is what I need to do, or, oh, I don't know what anybody else is doing, but this is where I want to go. It's just me. And I think it's important for Black and brown families to know they can be educated. Like, it's not even educated, it's just empowered. Like, you really don't have to be whatever you think you need to be. You're a parent, so therefore you are the expert already. It's your child. So that's the story behind my families. And I have wonderful families. You know, I keep my rates very, very reasonable. I'm not trying to become whatever. And I'm very blessed to be fortunate with support. And, you know, my kids are grown, so I can do this now. Before, I couldn't step out. But it wasn't time, right? Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing now. My son actually said to me, because he's finishing college, and he said, you know, Mom, I want to, you know, you're doing like what you love, and you get to work from home, and you know, I want to do. And I said to him, son, I know you're in that 20-year-old generation right now. I had to work. Mommy's been working for 35 years for other people. Like, this is work put into this. I have experience and knowledge, and you don't just leave college and do your dream job. I don't know what you 20-year-olds think. I mean, I've loved everything I've done because I love working with kids as a speech therapist, but this has been growth, like years and years of me, and I absolutely love it. My website is my website. If somebody is turned off by it, I have been a speech therapist in Louisiana, and I have had two, I will just say they were two white families that said they did not want a Black speech therapist working with their child. And I'm like, oh, fine. And so the school got a new therapist to come in that was not like me. And I'm like, that's your loss, because I'm really good at what I do. My kids are doing well. But it's the reality. I mean, there are folks who just feel still, and you know, we're in this climate right now.
The climate.
You know, yeah, just whatever, you know, it's a lot of unrest, and, you know, having the conversation about white privilege and racism. And I remember when I was in the teacher's lounge, and this was before, you know, all of the Black Lives Matter years ago, and we were talking about racism, and, you know, innocently enough, one of my colleagues said to me, you know, I don't see that things are happening. Like, I don't really understand why you think that there is. And I said, well, let me just tell you a little story. I said, I was in my speech path program. It's a very small program. There were three African Americans in the program, including myself. The three of us got called into the department chair's office and were recommended to go into the field of special education, because maybe this is not the field for us. And I said, the young man, the gentleman, he left. I don't know where he went. The girl transferred. I stayed. And I graduated with those other folks who did not look like me. And I graduated and did very well in school. And I remember that same department chairperson coming to me and apologizing and saying, I'm so sorry that I did that. And I said, oh, you know, just gave me more like, you know,
motivation.
You're not going to tell me what I can't do. But those are the things that my non-minority, my white friends, they don't know that's going on because they're not called into a room.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. You didn't, you know, and she said, well, I didn't know. And I said, no, you wouldn't know because they don't call you into a room. You're not called into a room. You're not told. No one says they don't want their child working with you because of the color of your skin. You know, this is the stuff that goes on that you're not aware of because you're not a minority. You're not a person of color, so you don't know what goes on.
Incredibly, it almost is like, it's why there's this big referendum, I feel like, right now, and this movement, I suppose, is because the overt racism, so to speak, mm-hmm. that used to happen with the whole, like, only colored bathroom here and whatever, dissipated to a degree, so it became more covert, like what you've experienced. Mm-hmm. I've experienced many a thing myself.
Of course.
But now, with I suppose when what we all saw happen to George Floyd was more of the overt, and it seems a lot more of that overtness has been, I would say, made okay by certain administrations.
Have, of course, yes, we have someone who is saying it's okay to do that because they're doing it and no accountability, and so you know what, this is great. I'm gonna come back out and do that. I've been keeping this in, and I've been wanting to do this.
I'm gonna take off my mask now, and I'm gonna show everybody.
Exactly.
And the allies, credit to them, are like, whoa, like we didn't know. Yeah. And it's almost as if that this was almost a necessary thing, and I do think that it will help in the long run.
Of course. I have two, you know, 6'3", 6'1", you know, black sons who walk the streets, and every day, you know, I'm just like, did you get home? Did you get home from work? Like, because I know I see, and it's, and I know this is not related to autism.
It's okay. Little tangent.
in reference to my children would come to visit me in Houston, and a store that I frequent, when they're with me, the manager follows me. And I remember one day turning around and saying, I come in this damn store at least 3 times a week and you never follow me. And now I have these 2 tall black males and now you're following me. What is that about? No. I was just, and I said, no. That is unacceptable. And whether you realize you're doing it or not, I'm helping you to know this is unacceptable. Like, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And to watch that, right? To watch that as a mom, it's frustrating. It's disheartening. It's just so blatant, right? Like that it exists, and people just, we're bringing it, we're just talking about it, and we need to talk about it. We've got to talk about it. And the same, I will bring this back to one of the reasons that I also am very assertive when it comes to supporting black and brown families, is because I know what teachers say about our families. I hear what they say in the meetings. I know that that child is not going to get what they need if the parent doesn't show up. And I tell parents, I say, you know what? When you don't show up, when you don't come to the meeting,
you confirm their bias.
They think you don't care, and they're not going to do for your child. Mm-hmm. So you show up for that meeting because you at least need to let them know, I am going to make you accountable. Even if you don't know what to say, show up, because I'm telling you, I hear it, I see it, I know what goes on behind the scenes. And it's not that everyone is bad, but I know people just, I don't even know if people realize that they're doing some of the things they do when it comes to cultural bias, right? I don't think they're even aware of it sometimes because they've done it for so long that they're not even aware of it.
It's because you don't know what you don't know, more or less, is the idea of what ignorance is. And a lot of people who don't realize what they say can put themselves in a position where they put their foot in their mouth. And I've been in that room also, where it almost as if it's like, you know, I'm sitting right.
Exactly.
Here, right? Like, what are we doing right now? And I think for parents, especially, and unfortunately, I'm in a, I guess, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but whatever. I'm in a neighborhood that is not predominantly Black at all. Mm-hmm. My neighborhood in Toms River, New Jersey is predominantly white, like 80%. Mm-hmm. So my son is probably one of a handful. Mm-hmm. So we make it clear, like, hey, there's no mistaking here as far as what we're doing.
It's functioning.
Well, anyway, I got thrown off course. But regardless, we're nearing the hour mark, so we'll just we'll find a way to wrap it up for today. Why don't you give us a plug on your website? Say how people can find you. If you have any social media or anything like that. And like we told our listeners earlier before, Stacey's gonna do another one of these in the future. We're gonna focus in on key aspects of what she provides and different tips in those aspects. And we're going to be a little bit less all over the place on that one. This one was just an introduction.
And but, you know, we were all over the place, but we're really in the same place. Yes. We really are. I think that, you know, yes, autism, but there is a cultural, you know, perspective in terms of your family dynamics, where you live, and how autism is perceived. And I think that is... maybe not talked about enough, and I haven't decided if that's my journey to write that book. I haven't decided yet. I figure it'll come to me if that's what I'm supposed to do. Autism around the world. I'm waiting for that philanthropist to give me that plane and just let me fly for free, and I can just go from one place to another, supporting families, and they don't have to pay, and everyone gets empowered. That is what I want to happen. But until then, my folks can find me on my website, which is we know the www, but it's autism4home, so it's autism4home.com. and I am also on Facebook under Everything Autism Strategies for Home. I do have an Instagram, but you know, I think I'm still old school. I'm not really sold on the whole like Instagram, spending a lot of time on it. But I do have Instagram under autism, mm-hmm. Everything Autism. So, you know, I just want people to know. That's all I really want. And I'm happy to share. I'm happy to talk to anyone about autism. You know, I have my business, and one of the things I promised myself in my business is that I would not make it unavailable to families. I wanted it to be available. And then I always have one pro bono family. So typically I don't have to search and seek out. Typically God just sends me a family. And then I'm like, okay, this is my family. That's going to be my pro bono family. And I offer and say, if you like, I can help you and do 3 months with you to help build your, and it works out great. I have a wonderful family right now in Alabama that I'm working with. And I don't even remember how this family found me. I assume it was on Facebook, and I'm so thankful that we've connected, because she was given very bad advice. There were some medical procedures done to her child that were so not related to autism. And, but you know what? She has become empowered. She has, in a very, very short time, seen lots of success with her kiddo. And she's doing phenomenal. She really is. She has just taken to learning, and she just needed to know where to find the information. And we connected, and it's been great. So my website, you know, you can go to Autism for Home, or I think if you search Everything Autism, it pops up on Google.
You have to put Stacey when you search that, because I think there's something else called Everything Autism as well. Because when I was Googling you, I got some hits that weren't what I was looking for. If you Google Stacey Everything Autism, she'll pop up. Autism for Home is pretty easy to remember. Mm-hmm. She'll pop up with that as well. I'll also put her website in the description of the podcast, so you guys can click on that, which is the simplest way to do it, and you can find all her information and any different ways that you can communicate with her on there. I really want to thank you, Stacey, for the time you spent with us today. You've been extremely gracious with that.
Of course.
that has been an amazing experience so far that we're having. I'm looking forward to the future ones. And I just want to tell all of our listeners, to all of our Goldies, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and for listening. We know what you're feeling. We know what you're going through. We are you. This is the Goldilocks podcast, and we thank you for listening.
Perfect. Thank you. This was great.